Santa and Elf.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official proceedings, we have a couple of things to take care of. First, I want to advise everybody that the East Portland Action Plan meeting set for the Midland Library on 122nd has been canceled. It was set for 6:30 p.m. this evening, and because of the weather, it was considered best to cancel it. Also, the 2 p.m. City Council meeting tomorrow afternoon has also been canceled. The next two things are, one is that I want to read a proclamation, and then secondly, Commissioner Fish is going to give us an update on the Warming Center. This is the proclamation, and could Rabbi Fisher come forward? Thank you. You go ahead and have a seat, Rabbi. I'm going to read the proclamation, and then you could speak, and we'll go from there. Whereas the City of Portland is committed to promoting physical activity and alternative methods of transportation, such as walking, for the continued livability of our hometown and the health of our citizens, and encouraging walking and outdoor play for children is especially critical in combating obesity and other preventable diseases. Walking contributes to the building of safe and friendly local neighborhoods where neighbors interact with neighbors. And whereas Eruv, according to Jewish tradition, is a leased use of a communal area as denoted by certain specified natural and artificial boundaries by mutual agreement, allowing many of the Jewish faith to carry items outside of their private homes on the Jewish Sabbath and certain holidays. Whereas Eruv also allows parents to push baby strollers and the elderly and disabled to use mobility aids within the demarcated boundaries, contributing to local neighborhoods in which citizens walk more often and visit each other's homes and in which children are encouraged to play outdoors. Whereas without an Eruv, parents and young children, the elderly and the disabled may be constrained by Jewish tradition to remain in their homes on Saturdays and certain holidays. Whereas the Mayor's Office of the City of Portland has been petitioned by the Portland Eruv Committee to lease, according to Jewish tradition, a portion of the city's communal area on behalf of those individuals of the Jewish faith who wish to use an Eruv. And whereas an Eruv will be located in southwest Portland in a communal area demarcated according to the Portland Eruv Committee and bounded by natural and artificial boundaries that are invisible or nearly invisible. Now, therefore, I, Tom Potter, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby agree to allow those of the Jewish faith to freely exercise their religious obligations for a period of 99 years at a rental of $1 in hand paid. Signed in the City of Portland, State of Oregon, the 17th day of December, 2008. Rabbi Fisher.
I am Rabbi T. Fisher. I've been working on the Eruv project for years now. As well as Rabbi Kenneth Project, Foundation Esther Israel, and many other community members have been working on this project. In Jewish tradition, our respect for the city and for the municipality is such that although the space is communal and we all have the rights to use it as well, the word Eruv, which in Hebrew means mingling and commingling, allows us to, through this proclamation and through an actual transaction, to use that specific space as a communal space for all of our community. And we thank the mayor and commissioner for that.
Thank you. I have your proclamation.
For it is a tree of life for those that grasp onto it, and all of its supporters are happy. Proverbs 3:18. And great appreciation from the Jewish community for it.
I'll take that, Tom.
Thank you very much, folks. You can stay or you can leave as you so deem. Thank you. Next, we're going to have a warming center update from Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor Potter. If Sally Erickson and Ryan Dibert could come forward, and then I'll introduce them. First, I want to thank my colleagues, in particular Commissioner Leonard, who co-sponsored an ordinance to get new dollars, new funding for the winter warming centers. And boy, was our timing fortuitous. The warming centers, in concert with our shelters and our emergency systems, which have kicked in this week, have proven to be a wise investment and have literally saved lives. I'd also, at this moment, like to arrange to have the council be updated on the city's coordinated response to the recent severe weather and what we expect in the upcoming week. Now, we know that everyone deserves a safe, warm, and stable place to call home, and this is especially important during the winter holidays. Now, the severe winter weather that we have been experiencing over the last week presents a direct threat to the health and safety of some of our community's most vulnerable citizens, in particular those living on the streets. Thanks to an unprecedented level of cooperation between our for-profit and nonprofit partners, the city, and a number of key players, we can report to you today that we have saved lives, we have given people respite from the tough winter conditions, and we are hoping to build on this success by creating more coordination and better communication among all the players going forward. Just by way of summary, I should tell you that our partners and key contractors include Bureau of Development Services, the Portland Office of Emergency Management, the Bureau of Housing and Community Development, the Portland Police Bureau, Portland Fire and Rescue, Multnomah County, 211 Info, TriMet, Red Cross, which is running our warming, which is one of our warming center contractors, Human Solutions, which is also a warming center contractor, Join, an addition, also a contractor, Transition Projects, the Salvation Army, Portland Rescue Mission, Union Gospel. And in addition to those organizations, there are individuals within each of these entities that have gone above and beyond, frequently on their own dime, to make sure that everyone has a place to escape the cold in the evening. A couple of the other unsung heroes I'd like to acknowledge are Dennis Lundberg from Janus Youth Programs, Steve Trujillo with Can We Help, and the staff at Join. They have literally gone above and beyond during this time. We're fortunate to have the dedication and compassion of so many public servants and nonprofit partners, and I've invited Sally and Ryan to give us a quick update on our city's response. Sally Erickson and Ryan Dibert, thank you.
Thank you. I know we have just a few minutes, but we wanted to come back and give you a briefing on what's going on in response to the severe weather. Thank you again for the additional resources to be able to open up two warming centers for families and for adults who are outside. The city and county have worked together with nonprofit providers like Human Solutions, Join, Transition Projects, the Red Cross, and many others to get family-focused and adult seasonal warming centers open. We are working with the Department of Community Justice to open an additional adult-focused warming center, which will open tomorrow night. We've had the most coordinated response to severe weather this year than we've ever had. We're able to get every single person who's outside inside during this severe weather. We've never been able to say that, and it has to do very much to the work of lots of bureaucrats and great people at nonprofit organizations. We're doing our very best to provide 24-hour places for people to go when the weather is like it's been and anticipated to be over the next couple days. We, of course, have resource limitations. We've had a few bumps in the road, but we're doing the best we can. We have an evolving response as the days go forward, and we'll be coordinating with POEM in the next day or so to continually improve our response. Since Ryan has done all of the legwork on coordinating the response, I'll let him give you an update on what's happening on a day-to-day level.
Thank you, Sally. Mayor Potter, commissioners. The city and county, as you know, have been working very diligently over with our not-for-profit provider partners, Human Solutions, and Join to open a family-focused seasonal warming center at 81st and Halsey. That opened on December 8th and has been serving families nightly since. We're working urgently with the County Department of Community Justice and with Transition Projects, Inc. to open an additional adult-focused warming center site at a downtown location in a county building that will open tomorrow night. Each of these warming centers will be open 7 nights a week through the duration of the winter, making it a predictable, consistent resource for people who need a place to come in throughout the winter months. That's due almost entirely to the foresight and of council providing the resources to be able to open that. We thank you for your work on that and your commitment. In addition to our city and county-funded seasonal warming centers, BHCD coordinates with the Red Cross to open severe weather warming centers on nights when predicted weather conditions pose an imminent threat to health or safety for unsheltered people. BHCD mobilized the Red Cross to open warming centers at Central City Concerns Estate Hotel at Northwest 3rd and Cooch, and the Portland Four Square Church at Southeast 13th and Ankeny beginning on Saturday, December 13th. They've continued operations nightly since, and we anticipate with the severe weather continuing throughout the middle of next week, they will be open during that time as well. During the daytime, an essential network of day centers throughout our city are opening their doors, often for expanded hours. There are many of them. They include Daybreak at Julia West House, St. Francis Dining Hall, Join Human Solutions, the Salvation Army Safe Day Center, Downtown Chapel at St. Vincent de Paul, New Avenues for Youth, Outside In, Sisters of the Road, and Blanchet House, among others. Many area shelters have voluntarily expanded their shelter capacity overnight during severe weather as well. Those include the Portland Rescue Mission, City Team Ministries, Human Solutions Daybreak Shelter Network, and Union Gospel Mission. Other providers have additionally suspended normal daytime operations to expand their day center capacity. Those include the Portland Rescue Mission and Salvation Army Harbor Light, as well as the Union Gospel Mission. There have been exemplary outreach efforts over the past week. Staff at agencies like Join, Janus Youth, Cascadia's Project Respond, and Can We Help have been literally combing the streets, often until the early hours of the morning, looking for individuals who are hunkered down, making sure they have the gear they need to make it through the night, and working with those who don't to get into our warming centers. There are many agencies, though, that I'd like to bring your attention to today who have gone very far above and beyond the call of duty in this situation, particularly several of our partners. First and foremost, though, we need to acknowledge the work that the Red Cross is doing. Not only their professionals that are coordinating this emergency response, but I think most importantly, the volunteer resources that they've drawn on from the community. The volunteers of the Red Cross are keeping these warming centers open every night. They are saving lives, and we owe them a great debt of gratitude. In addition, many agencies have stepped up and provided exemplary service, particularly the staff at Central City Concern, Join, TPI and Human Solutions, Can We Help from Father's House Ministry, again, as Commissioner Fish mentioned, Dennis Lumberg of Janus Youth. TriMet has been an exceptional resource for us. They've allowed shuttles from each of the warming center sites to the other to make sure that we can meet capacity. They've also been available to roll out buses as emergency overnight warming centers should we overflow our capacity at the existing centers. It's been a critical resource. The Portland Office of Emergency Management, 211, the Portland Business Alliance, and the Fire and Police Bureaus have all also stepped up their efforts and have been very helpful in coordinating this work. We have some very specific needs that we have identified immediately. Most important is the need for additional volunteer capacity. We'll be working closely with Commissioner Fish's office and our partners at POEM to put out the call for additional volunteers. People interested in volunteering with the Red Cross can work through Hands on Greater Portland, their website, to sign up. We also have a strong need for blankets, sleeping bags, tarps, tents, any donation that the community can bring forward. And again, we'll work together to make sure people in the community know where those resources can be provided. As Sally said, this is an evolving response. As with any emergency response, we're looking daily at the needs that are identified and working extraordinarily quickly to attempt to meet those needs. And we look forward to any advice or counsel that you can offer here today, and we look forward to your ongoing partnership as we address this critical need in our community.
There are a few people in the audience. There are many more that are out on the streets right now or serving people who are homeless, but there are a few people in the audience, if they'd be willing to stand so we can acknowledge them. Eric Corliss and Kelly Scott from Red Cross. Steve Trujillo is here from Can We Help. Is there anyone else here that's been working on the severe weather response? No, Northwest Pilot Project is here.
Many of these people are literally on the streets right now doing the work, the good work that that they've been doing throughout this emergency. So.
Thank you, folks, very much for what you've been doing.
If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to observe, make a couple of observations. I want to first thank you for doing this work and coordinating it. Commissioner Fish is absolutely right when he says that this effort has saved lives. There's no doubt that the work you've done, and particularly in the coordination with the police and fire bureaus, who I know have actually volunteered to open up some of these centers earlier than what they were otherwise opened. And so I want to acknowledge Commissioner Fish and Mayor Potter for leading two bureaus where you have people that are empowered on the front lines to use their best judgment. That doesn't always happen, and it's very heartwarming. But I think it's also important to acknowledge and observe that while we are providing these shelters at night for people, they have to leave in the morning. And as we all know, the temperatures have hovered in the mid-20s. During the day, so it really I want to put in context this work that Commissioner Fish is leading to build a day access center in our community. This is an example of why it is so important to have a day access center for people to go to keep warm, because though they may be warm at night, what do they do during the day? I mean, none of us know the answer to that right now. So I think it's really important to have people understand why this effort is so important and why the work Commissioner Fish is doing needs to be supported by all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. And if I may, Mayor, I think from this presentation you can tell why I'm so proud of the work that our homeless czar, Sally Erickson, is doing, and also Ryan Dibert. Ryan's been working 18-hour days through the weekend to make sure that this fragile system we've in essence cobbled together is working for the benefit of our most vulnerable citizens. But we would not have this system in place if we did not enjoy the strong support of this council and the leadership of all three of you in different capacities, including the mayor-elect, who was on TV over the weekend telling people where the shelters were and where they could go. There has been an unprecedented mobilization of people to try to deal with this weather emergency. We would not be here celebrating progress were it not for the new money, the new dollars that both the city and the county have put into this system. And that's important because we've not diverted $1 away from other existing programs. This is new money that the city and the county have put into this. But I will tell you that as proud as I am of our initial response, we know that we can do better. And in fact, in conversations with a number of my colleagues and the advocates, we've gotten some positive feedback about how we can enhance the system. Commissioner Leonard, your idea of extending hours and the mayor-elect's idea that we should extend hours to provide more coverage is something we take seriously. So we're grateful that with the support of the mayor and the mayor-elect, we'll be convening a meeting with Carmen Merlo from POM, who is especially skilled in helping people create systems around emergency planning. And Carmen is going to use her good office to help convene all the players that we've identified who are working on the ground to make this happen and help us understand better ways of communicating and creating structure and then meeting the additional needs going forward. And so we're appreciative of that collaboration as well. We have a lot more work to do, but I will tell you, with these two individuals playing a leadership role in leading the city's efforts, I think that the most vulnerable people in our community can know that we are doing everything we can to address their needs. So thank you.
Thank you for your leadership.
Yes.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you, folks. Council will come to order. Sue, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Salzman. Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 1721, request of Don Weir to address council to thank Mayor Potter. Is Mr. Weir here? Go right on up to the table, please.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes, Mr. Weir.
My name is Donald Weir. In March, Jenny Hayes asked me if I would be her subject in a Wieden Kennedy exhibit of Interesting People of Portland, the first Thursday of last May. After the interview, she had a meeting with the other artists in the exhibit, and they voted to dedicate a wall to the gallery to my service, to our country. In 1986, I was in a coma for 14 days, followed by a month of amnesia in my family's care. I was unemployable, and some fellow bikers rented me a place to fix motorcycles on 14th Place in Alberta for $10 a day. I spent the 86 and 87 learning how to read and other basic skills we learned in school. I made a friend who was a traffic officer at Portland Police, Terry Barker. I got involved with community policing to stop the drug dealing and other crimes in the community. The Portland Police helped me deal with the delayed stress in the Marine Corps and recover from my head injury. One of the officers who helped me and I worked with on community policing was Tom. I have great memories of helping community policing. My district officer walked into my business and stated, "Don, I'm sure glad there's only one of you." And I asked, "Why is that?" He replied, "There, if there aren't you in the city, I'd be out of a job." Being asked by Detective Frank Baca of the Port of Portland to be the representative on the steering committee for the development of the police athletic league, which Tom chaired. The time I was waiting for a verdict, the man I arrested, the prosecuting attorney, said, "When I get overwhelmed and feel we're making no difference, I go out of my way to drive by your shop to see the joyful faces of all the children. My favorite is riding down Alberta with Terry beside me, leading the entire day shift of the traffic division as they took me to breakfast to hear how I arrested a street drug dealer, which began the raid of a drug dealing gang from Compton who ran the drug business known as Crack Alley. They were the first to be federally prosecuted drug dealing in Portland. Tom, there are many stories. Of my helping children and the people in my neighborhood. There was the Crip from Compton who fell in love with a Christian lady who walked into my shop and said, 'You are respected by the drug dealers and church folks too, and you are white. I want that. Will you help me?' I was helping him build the foundation of happiness when his foundation was not finished, and he killed a man in anger on Killingsworth. Another group of individuals I helped with the foundation of happiness with the skinheads after Minsky killed Mara Sarah. My African-American grandmother, Maddie, who helped me share the joys of life with the teenagers, needed help rebuilding her restaurant after the fire. One of the ladies who was in the car when Sarah was killed did not understand why I wanted her help because she had never used a hammer. I asked her to just sit down in a chair in the place in the middle of the restaurant. I explained to the 2 to 5-year-olds who showed up to help me with the barn raising about how she was being punished for something that someone else did, and it was their job to love her and let her know it was going to be okay. I walked in to get a cup of coffee and take a break. I stopped and enjoyed the scene before me. There was a 2-year-old sitting on her foot, two children leaning up against her, and a 4-year-old sitting on her lap. She looked up at me, and resentment in her eye was replaced by a tear rolling down her cheek. But my favorite is Don Gillet, who was... I'll read that. She was being punished for potty, not going potty, and I gave her some advice.
Don, you're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay. Well, I'll give you this. At the end of the interview with Jonathan Nicholas from the column he wrote about me, for my efforts on Alberta, he asked, "The dope, the despair, the guns, the fear, do you ever think of moving, maybe opening a nice quiet shop in Tigard?" I cocked my head and smiled. Then I said, "I'm a Marine. I don't know how to live in a peaceful environment. As a veteran Marine of the 6th Combat Engineers Support Battalion and the 2nd Marine Division, I want to thank you, Tom, for helping me be a better Marine."
Thank you.
Good job. I met Don at North Precinct when I was the captain there, and heard about this guy that was repairing all the kids' bikes in the neighborhood for free, and I thought that was kind of strange until I met Don and I realized he did it for the love of community. So thank you, Don. Please call the next.
Item 1722, request of Debbie Castleton to address council regarding update on diverse and empowered employees of Portland and the LGBTQ and Friends Affinity Group.
Morning, Debbie.
Good morning. My name is Debbie Castleton, and I'm a proud city employee. I've worked for the Bureau of Environmental Services for the past 6.5 years and have volunteered my time as the chair of the Diverse and Empowered Employees of Portland, otherwise known as DEEP, for the last couple of years, and as the chair of the LGBTQ and Friends Affinity Group. I'm here today not to give you an update on DEEP or the LGBTQ and Friends Affinity Group, but to say thank you. I wanted to surprise you. I personally want to thank each of the commissioners and the mayor-elect Adams for your overwhelming support of diversity in the workplace and for the support of DEEP and its affinity groups. I'm here this morning to specifically say a special thank you to Mayor Potter, who I like to call Dad, for myself personally, and on behalf of DEEP, the LGBTQ and Friends Affinity Group, and the LGBTQ Squared, which is Queer and Questioning, Pride Committee. When you were the police chief, as you well know, you were the first police chief to march in the Portland's annual Gay Pride Parade, and you made a point of continuing to do so every year. And it was exciting for me this year to march with you. It was one of the first times that I got to march in the parade, and I got to march with you this year, and I was so impressed with everybody who was saying thank you as we were walking along. It was really exciting. In 2007, you worked closely with a group of employee volunteers to help support the formation of the employee-driven group DEEP. And since then, DEEP has helped form almost 10 affinity groups. I don't know if you knew that we had almost 10 now. And in the last couple of years, you've initiated the development of the new Office of Human Relations dedicated to combating social issues such as race and sexual identity discrimination, hate crimes, and human rights abuses through the establishment of the Human Rights Commission and Police Racial Profiling Committee. You've had many other accomplishments, and I want to thank you for that. And I've call you Dad because there's so many people in the LGBTQ community that don't have the support of their parents, and you've been always overwhelmingly supportive. One of your former employees even commented that you attend more gay events than he does, and he's a gay man. So I don't know. It's pretty close with him. But anyway, I am just very pleased to have you as an employer, and I wish you the best of luck. And I know that I'll see you again, but I will miss seeing you more often. So on behalf of the before-mentioned groups and the city employees, please accept this token of our appreciation. I made you a little piece of art here. I want to thank you for your longtime support and advocacy to the lesbian, gay, bi, trans, queer, and questioning citizens, and for your dedication to creating a supportive environment, diverse workforce, and an inclusive workplace culture for City of Portland employees.
Very nice plaque, Debbie. Thank you very much. The only scary part is there's 8 pictures of me on there. But thank you very much. That's very touching. Please read the next.
Item 1723, request of Susan Emmons, Northwest Pilot Project, to address council regarding appreciation for support of housing for low-income seniors.
That's who that is.
Well, obviously, I'm really Santa Claus. My address is the North Pole, but I'm here to represent Susan Emmons of Northwest Pilot Project. This is my elf, Cindy Mosney, who does outreach through a city-funded program to homeless women. I'm here today to thank you. I would like to say that I've been watching you all year. I know if you've been naughty, and I know if you've been nice. And I would say you've been more nice than naughty. I think that often you see many of us in the community coming in to lambast you and complain and say what hasn't gone right during the year. And I thought it was important to take a moment at this time to thank you, Mayor Potter, for your extremely helpful support to homeless programs and homeless people, and your commitment and concern. To thank every one of you for doing public service, I certainly wouldn't have the stomach for it. I think it's difficult. I know people get you at the bus stop, get you in the grocery stores to talk to you about speed bumps. And I want to thank you for loving Portland. I know that there are things that we don't agree with time to time. We quarrel. But I know that every one of you has an intense love of Portland, and that means so much to me. I love Portland, too. I think Portland is a good community. I think in the next years with the leadership we have on this council, it's going to be a great city and one that everyone in the country is going to look to. I wanted to particularly thank you. There's so many things I'd like to thank you for, but today I'd like to particularly thank you for the city funding that went into the Morrison. It was a project we opened a year ago at this time. It's 140 units. It's owned by the Housing Authority of Portland, but it wouldn't have been possible without $4 million of city funds that went into it. And it's a 140-unit building of mixed incomes, but we've put 45 chronically homeless people, people who are outside on the street and who have been in there for a year. And I've brought the profiles of two of the people that we put into the Morrison. And just so that you could read their stories, it's a beautiful building. People were worried about it being cheek by jowl by a condo tower, the Civic. This is the building that's across from PGE Stadium. And the condo tower was built by Gertie Nedlin. None of those fears have come to pass. It's a beautiful building. The neighbors love it. And so, again, there are so many projects you've made possible with your money that we're putting people into that is keeping them safe and warm and stable in their housing. So I really just want to say I hope I'm representing the whole city of Portland and thanking you today. And I wish I had a plaque to give you, but these are homemade goodies.
Break my diet.
That's better than a plaque.
These brownies are actually nationally famous.
These aren't 60 eras brownies, are they? Because if so, I'm going to wait till after work to have mine.
So again, on behalf of all of us, thank you. Thank you for your love of the city and for being the public servant you are.
Thank you.
That's very sweet. Thank you very much. Susan,
if I could just, before you go, if I could just note that Northwest Pilot Project is a core partner of the city, and the work you do for seniors and homeless seniors is pioneering. What some people probably don't know is that you are one of the key people who brought about the preservation movement in our city. And you, from the get-go, have insisted that when we lose affordable housing through market conditions, that we have a moral obligation to replace them. It led to the no-net loss policy that the city adopted. It's led to an ambitious agenda to save and preserve affordable housing. It's at the cornerstone of the city's strategy to keep all 11 expiring use properties between now and 2013 in nonprofit or for-profit ownership with the affordability maintained. And yesterday, when we as a council did our work session on the federal agenda, we had two items that we have asked our lobbyists to pursue in Washington in housing. Both of them have to do with preservation. So I want to thank you for a career of holding us accountable on preserving affordable housing in the downtown core and all the good work that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. 1724, request of David Morrison to address council regarding unregulated microwave towers. And David called in. He's not able to make it today.
Okay. Move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
Well, Mayor Potter, I don't know if I want to pull 1739 or if I can just speak to one item on the consent agenda.
Do what?
I'd like to speak to one item without pulling it. And I'm going to ask Lisa Turley to come forward, who's the director of BOEC, for which we have put this on the calendar.
Good morning.
So I actually don't want to talk about this item.
Oh, okay.
I intend to embarrass you.
Sweet.
So as people learn, Lisa is the director of our 911 center. So she oversees the first person you talk to when your life is in crisis. From my days at the fire bureau, I can tell you that there is no more stressful phone call to make than when you find a loved one sick or even worse, or you're involved in a car accident, or your house is on fire and you're trapped, all of which happens out at the 911 center. These people answer those calls and have to remain calm and collected and listen for the salient facts and get the equipment rolling right away. Lisa's the person that's in charge of that. When I was assigned the Bureau in 2002 when I was elected to council, and learned yesterday along with Lisa that I will no longer have the Bureau as of January. But I just think it would be a tragic mistake not to publicly commend Lisa for the leadership she's brought to what, by almost universal accounts, was a dysfunctional Bureau which was tragic given their mission in life. Lisa has brought a approach and a management style that I will tell you has created one of the best 911 emergency operations centers in the entire United States. And if you want a benchmark for that, the benchmark is, which has been for me, how fast do we pick up the phones when you call? We have historic low call holding times at the 911 center, which means if you're trapped in your house, and I've listened to phone calls on tape of people trapped in their house, unable to get out of their house, and you call 911, the last thing you want to hear is a recorded message asking you to please stand by. Somebody will answer your phone. We now answer them almost universally within 20 seconds, which is an unheard of accomplishment. And Lisa is responsible for that. And not without some blood, sweat, and tears. We've had, I would characterize Lisa and my relationship as dynamic. And and I don't know that I could, right? Is that a good way to put it?
As always, Randy, you are spot on in your description.
And there is nobody I know of that works out there or I've worked with before that could have risen to the challenge as Lisa has. And Lisa, as Commissioner Fish characterized the work of BHCD earlier, saving lives, I know you've saved lives. And there are lives of people who are yet to be in peril that you well save by your work. And that, for me, has been the benchmark, and I think the entire community needs to know that.
Well, thank you, Randy. I do appreciate it, but just I want to remind everybody that I don't answer phones. I have a really wonderful staff out there who has pitched in and done risen to the challenges that we've presented to them, and I do appreciate you for challenging us because you certainly have.
Thank you.
So
and
thanks.
Thank you for your work on behalf of all of Portland, and I was heartened at the press conference yesterday to hear your new commissioner, Amanda Fritz, acknowledge what an outstanding job you're doing.
Great. And thank you very much.
You.
It's been a pleasure, Randy. Thanks.
Thank you.
And you too, Mayor.
Thank you,
you,
Lisa. Good job. Is there any member of this audience who wishes to pull any particular item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time cert.
Accept amendments to the Mount Tabor Park Master Plan is 1725, and I'll read all three. 1726, affirm the recommendation of the Mount Tabor Yard and Nursery Planning Group to support ongoing efforts to redevelop the Mount Tabor Central Yard, Nursery, and Long Block. And 1727, affirm management authority for certain city property in the vicinity of Mount Tabor, including the Mount Tabor Yard, Nursery, and Long Block.
Parks Director Santner, could you please come forward? Commissioner Salzman isn't here, so you can pick up the slack.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Zary Santner, Director of Parks and Recreation. I'm very pleased to be here to bring to you three items for your consideration. First is a report on the work of Mount Tabor Central Yard and Nursery Planning Group, amending the Mount Tabor Park Master Plan to include the Central Yard, Nursery, and Long Block, including amendments updating the historic designation of the park and addition of the off-leash dog area. Second is a resolution requesting Council accept the proposed design for the Mount Tabor Yard, Nursery, and Long Block, and an ongoing Council commitment to prioritize identification of funding to continue work toward developing construction documents. Third, an ordinance clarifying management authority of the park and specifically the 1.8 acres within the yard currently under management authority of the Water Bureau. This ordinance transfers that management authority to Portland Parks and Recreation while working to identify a mutually acceptable accommodation to keep the Water Bureau funds whole. First, members of the Council, I would like to thank you for your support of updating the Mount Tabor Park Master Plan and the redevelopment of the Mount Tabor Yard and Nursery and Long Block. As many of you know, all of Park's maintenance facilities are in need of upgrading. But today, we are here to talk about improving the central maintenance facility at Mount Tabor Yard. Because this site serves the entire park system, its renovation is a top priority for the Bureau. Adopting this resolution is the first step in addressing the significant maintenance facilities needs of the Bureau. As was directed by this Council last year, the Bureau undertook an extensive public involvement effort that included creating a 34-member advisory group consisting of citizens, Parks Bureau staff, and management group who met hundreds of hours to research the current condition of the facility and identify the best solutions for addressing the extensive safety and workflow issues at the yard. I am very, very proud of the work that this group has produced. Every single member of this group deserves recognition for their commitment to and passion for finding a workable solution for the Bureau and the community. In particular, I would like to commend the work of Maya Spencer, who has staffed and supported this project over the last year. I am also very, very gratified for the work of three principal players, key players, on this group, namely John Larson, Karen Trappin, and Eileen Argentina, who played a key role in ensuring that this project was brought back to you for your consideration within the 12-month period, as was promised to you. I would like to invite these three people to come and give you further information about the process and the proposed design. Eileen Argentina is the Parks and Recreation Service Manager. John Larson is a representative from Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association. Karen Trappin is one of our wonderful, capable carpenters working at Mount Tabor Yard. They will be joined by Jim Cavalich, who is the principal of Opsis Architecture, who helped this team to translate their vision into a design that will be presented to you.
John Larson. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Commissioners, for having us here today. While I'm talking, we'll be showing you some pictures of the Mount Tabor Yard in its current condition. We showed you these a year ago. I think to some extent you're familiar with them, but not everybody in the audience necessarily. As you well know, this process was born in controversy. If 2 years ago someone had told me that we would be here having worked shoulder to shoulder together, the community and the Parks Bureau, I would have been skeptical that we would have arrived at this place. 15 months ago, after going through the mediation process that Director Santner initiated to repair the relationship between the Bureau and the neighborhood, we came to you asking that you approve and fund a public process to determine the best future for the Mount Tabor Yard. When you passed the resolution that we brought to you in September 2007, we heard very clearly and explicitly that what you wanted us to deliver was not just a vague plan to make a plan for the yard, but an actual plan that could go forward, a clear road for the future of the yard. And we took that charge very seriously. We invoked it often in our work over the last year, and it guided our efforts through the entire process. We convened a group, as Zeri said, of 36 members, including people from the neighborhood and from the wider community of Portland, and members of the Park Bureau administration and line staff, actual workers at the yard. During the mediation process, the community members had become acutely conscious of the enormous amount of work that takes place at the Tabor Yard and the importance of that work to the Portland's beautiful system of parks. And we had also become all too aware of the seriously degraded structures and working conditions at the yard. For this reason, it was of paramount importance to us that people actually working at the yard be active participants in our process, people like Karen and her colleagues, many of whom are here today, and that all the workers at the yard be consulted regularly throughout the process to make sure that the plan we developed would be a practical one. Our group went through the city's standard RFP process to choose an architectural firm to work with us on the plan for the Tabor Yard, and we were very fortunate to choose Opsis Architecture, which has done an extraordinary job of assembling the plan that we're going to show you this morning. They've been responsive, diligent, and resourceful in coming up with an effective way to improve what is a very difficult site. Part of Opsis' valuable qualifications for this project was the presence on their team of Maintenance Design Group, which, as the name suggests, specializes in the design of maintenance facilities. Maintenance Design Group did extensive interviews with the workers at the yard all the way through this process to ensure that the redesigned space would be practical and efficient. In the course of working with the yard staff over the past year and through the interviews conducted by Maintenance Design Group, all of those of us on this planning group have become aware that the conditions at the yard were even worse than we thought last fall, with tremendous inefficiencies and encumbrances and really unsafe working conditions and just great difficulties for the work that takes place there. Our planning group of 34 members, as you will see in the attached report, met as a group roughly twice a month over the last year. We also had 8 subcommittees for things like transportation, facilities, horticulture, land use and zoning, so on, that met more or less frequently over the entire year. Altogether, I would estimate that there are more than 2,000 volunteer hours in the process we've undertaken, reflected in the report that you see before you today. As you know, this was not the usual Citizens Advisory Committee process. I've served on those in which too often a bureau shares its plan with an advisory group, gets some feedback, makes a few adjustments, and then proceeds to do more or less what it intended to do in the first place. This process for the Mount Tabor Yard was a real partnership between the bureau and the community members, an open process that was both deep and intense as well as long, and I would like to add that it was not by any means easy. Given where we started, it was difficult for citizens to always trust the Parks Bureau, and it was likewise difficult, I would say, for the Bureau's administrative staff to cede control of the ultimate outcome to a truly open and public decision-making process. We struggled a lot with the process and with each other, but I firmly believe that the end result is a design that is much stronger than Parks would have arrived at without this tremendous degree of participation from the community and from the workforce. We are delivering to you a damn good product and one that has a great deal of community support. Our report comes to you in the form of a major revision of the Mount Tabor Park Master Plan, including redevelopment of the Mount Tabor Central Yard, Nursery, and Long Block, and updating the Master Plan to include the historic designation and the off-leash dog area. The effort we put into understanding the work and functioning of the yard gave us invaluable information about what changes were needed and was reinforced by the community passion for workplace safety. We believe strongly that we, the community and the Bureau working together, have fulfilled the responsibility that you gave to us in passing Resolution 36539 on September 26th of last year. The design that OPSIS Architecture has created for the Mount Tabor Yard is a stellar solution to what has been a nagging problem, and this design was wholeheartedly adopted by the members of the planning group. We are grateful for the trust that you placed in our process and for funding it, and we hope that you will fund the continuation of this design and engineering effort so that the redevelopment of the Mount Tabor Yard is ready to be built as soon as an infrastructure stimulus plan is available. Thank you again for your support. And now I'll turn it over to Eileen Argentina, Services Manager for Portland Parks and Recreation.
Thank you, John. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. After a year of work, we are pleased to present to you our vision for redevelopment of the Mount Tabor Yard, Nursery, and Long Block. As John indicated, the process was at times challenging. The Parks Bureau deeply appreciates the partnership we created with the community and the support they have shown for our central yard to continue in its current location. Both the community members and Parks Management recognized early on how essential it was to have our line workers directly involved in this process, and we have benefited greatly from their participation. At key moments when we struggled with difficult choices, it was our collective commitment to supporting our workforce that gave us back our bearings and kept us moving forward. This proposal addresses the significant safety issues and seriously inefficient working conditions that have been a longstanding concern. It will bring the site up to current standards and also provide flexibility for future needs. The creative response to the site's challenges and opportunities make for an outstanding design. It's efficient, it's safe, it's sustainable, and it's community-oriented. First of all, it's efficient because the vision for the site optimizes traffic flow for our heavily fleet-dependent operation. It co-locates related work units in a logical configuration, and it allows us to utilize state-of-the-art systems in the skilled trades, community gardening, and horticultural production practices in the management of turf and irrigation, and in providing heavy equipment services. Secondly, it's a safe design. It addresses safety by resolving conflicts between people and vehicles and providing the public access to the park outside of the yard. It also updates HVAC and electrical systems to meet current standards. It will make the site ADA accessible and welcome workers, volunteers, and visitors. Third, it's a sustainable design. It will incorporate truly innovative green building and site design techniques that you'll hear about in a moment. The site program brings together the activities needed to take care of our world-class and constantly growing park system. It will create a hub for the care of our green infrastructure by bringing together city nature employees from 9 different work sites throughout the city. It is also a community-oriented design. It addresses the need for the yard to be a good neighbor, honors the relationship to our beautiful Mount Tabor Park, and opens up direct access to the park for people who live south of Division Street. For all of these reasons, this represents an effective and economical design which promotes productivity, collaboration, and safety, minimizes energy and water demands, and meets our multiple objectives for the community and for our workers. I'd like to invite Jim Calvillage from OPSIS Architects to give you a brief tour of the extraordinary vision for the Mount Tabor Yard.
Thank you, Eileen.
Could we get the microphone over there, too?
Yeah. The vision for the central maintenance yard really builds on the 1911 original plan by the Olmsted brothers for Mount Tabor Park, where they took a look at the southwest corner of the park and felt that that was an important location for a nursery to serve the park system and to be an integrated part of the Mount Tabor experience. The site today has quite a few qualities of the original Olmsted plan. As you can see, the top part of the slide image indicates the existing nursery, but also the central maintenance yard, which is crowded into the south corner of the site. The existing plan has numerous compromises in terms of seismic non-compliance, as well as lack of ADA accessibility, the poor vehicular circulation, which creates safety issues, inadequate workspace. Many of the staff are working in turn-of-the-century stable buildings that are welding facilities. The proposed plan takes a look at how we can adequately size the program that's already on site, as well as concentrating the City Nature program here as well to for gained efficiencies for delivery of services. It also provides proper vehicular circulation and clearances that are important for safety and efficiency, integrates green design, and really works to create an integrated fit into Mount Tabor Park, as well as contributing a number of public amenities. There's three zones to the facility development. One is referred to as a public zone. It faces Division Street. It's where the administration center is. It's a welcoming facility, includes public parking, as well as a secure parking garage to the east. I might add that 25% of the parking requirement for staff, we're assuming, will be achieved through public transit as well as carpooling. So that's been taken into consideration with sizing the parking structure, as well as an area for fueling wash stations that serve the general city fleet. There's also the warehouse and shop working zone. It's kind of in the center part of the site. Most of the vehicles will not have to go into that area, so it creates a safer working condition. Very adaptable, flexible warehouses. The warehouse to the top of the slide is actually carved into the hillside actually create a site that doesn't exist currently to gain efficiencies for how the facility can maintain as much park space as possible. Above that warehouse is where we have the beginning of the horticulture zone. That will include a greenhouse that sits on top of that structure, container gardens that are terraced into the hillside of the park, as well as to the left where the a more concentrated footprint for the in-ground tree nursery is located. The result of this is that there's a number of additional spaces that can be given back to the park and can become community amenities, including creating a entry address to the park from 60th Street, paving what is now a dirt path so there's safer pedestrian access into the park, including a community garden area, a small shelter pavilion that will be used for environmental education, creating a connection from 64th Street intersection at Division into the park that doesn't exist right now. That will become a bike and pedestrian pathway, allowing South Tabor residences to have a safe and a convenient connection to Mount Tabor Park, as well as rain garden and demonstration areas that will teach the community about sustainability strategies. Some of those strategies include green roofs, rain gardens, looking at adequate daylighting for administrative areas and warehouses, as well as provisions possibly for geothermal radiant chilled slabs, photovoltaics so the facility can generate its own energy, as well as solar hot water collection, as well as localized gray water systems. At a minimum, this facility is designed to achieve a LEED Gold certification level. What this facility will give back to the community, too, is a civic identity. You can drive by the facility now and not even know it's there from this important address on Division. This is the vision for the administrative building where meeting rooms that will serve staff will also be a resource for the community, for the Mount Tabor community, for meeting rooms, for environmental education, as well as classes about community gardening. So it really becomes a civic resource for the greater community. In terms of realizing the vision for this, we've given a lot of consideration to how the facility construction can be staged or perhaps even phased construction, depending on available resources. And part of the strategy here is to keep the staff on site, to not have to incur costs of relocation, and also the efficiencies of keeping everyone on site versus separating various work units. And so this shows an incremental approach to construction, starting with building that north warehouse into the site, and then a series of other warehouses that